Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Hey! Coast to coast, no matter what time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I am your host extraordinaire, Cole Thompson. We got Michael Hernandez producing on the other side of the glass, but more importantly, man, do we have a good show for you today. Week 2 of the NFL comes with much surprise, little concern, and much more questions. Week 3 of the college football season has admitted we have two contenders for the college football playoff championship, and everyone else is just along for the ride. I'll give you my top 10, but let's just start off with this. I am a proud alum of the University of Alabama. I love the fact that I was able to go to school there. I love the fact that I grew up in SEC country. I love the fact that every single year I have watched old daddy Nick Saban be able to lead the charge on the way to another national championship.
Well, good for you.
What?
Good for you.
I'm just saying.
I'm salty.
I'm just saying it's a great day when you went to an alma mater that has a winning football program. But for the first time in my life, I have to say this. I hate you, Derrick Henry. I hate you so much. Why? Why must I hate Derrick Henry? Well, as many of you have known, I am in a major fantasy football league with 12 of my buddies that I've been in since I was in high school. And after being the number 7 pick, I have dominated the first 2 weeks of fantasy. Every single one of my players, whoop, 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 right off, go off. I was this close to gaining, back-to-back weeks, the franchise title. Grabbing the top scorer in back-to-back weeks. But no, Derrick Henry and his 182 three-yard touchdown game gave my buddy Chris Chamberlain 45 points for a running back on the way to a 33-30 victory in overtime over the Seattle Seahawks. By the way, when overtime happens, can we just not include those points? Like, can we just take that stuff out of the conversation? Because let's be real, it's already unfair. It's already unfair, I get it. And I know that's something not to be that mad about. But you have to understand, Chris is annoying. Chris will not stop talking about it. He loves to think that because of he has been in the league for 3 years, he is now the king of the league. I hate it. It's annoying. And unfortunately, it had to happen to Derrick Henry. Roll Tide, I guess.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
The smartest thing any NFL coach can do today is not only trust their gut, but trust their number one player. And that's the thing that I don't think enough people understand. The number one playmaker does not have to be a set weapon, a set position, or a set object. It has to just be the right person for the right offense, for the right system to work. So think about this. In Kansas City, the right option, ball in your hands, game on the line, you want Patrick Mahomes getting that ball in some capacity. Either he's throwing it, he's running it, he's doing something with it. In Tennessee, it's easily Derrick Henry. You want Derrick Henry to run the ball. You want Derrick Henry to move the ball every single play. You have to. When you look at a team like the Houston Texans for years, it was Deshaun Watson. And for the Baltimore Ravens, it easily has got to be Lamar Jackson. You want the ball in Lamar Jackson's hand with game on the line 10 out of 10. And why is that? Because he's the best player on the field. It's that simple. Lamar Jackson is not your normal prototypical quarterback who's going to be able to run for probably just 30 yards on the day, maybe get a touchdown, pass for another 300, throw 4 touchdowns, and walk away with maybe 1 turnover. That's not his style. That's not his approach. That's not his game. But it's okay. It may not be his game, but it's his game that works the most. That's the thing that people don't understand. It is his game, and it is his momentum. When you look at what Lamar can do, yeah, It may matter. Sunday's game against the Kansas City Chiefs mattered. And it mattered because of everybody still to this day is talking negatively about him in some type of capacity. I can't get past this team. I can't go past this. Patrick Mahomes versus him, not even in the same category. You're right. They're not. But then again, we don't need to measure everyone on the same category. If you're asking me right now, which is the best option? Which is the way that to go? Do you want the high-end pocket passer? Do you want the guy who has the rocket arm? Or do you want the guy who can be mobile? Which one do you want? Well, I think it just matters on what type of offense you're running. To me, when I look at what Baltimore does in Greg Roman's system, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes would work. I don't know if Patrick Mahomes would be the number one guy. Now, don't get me wrong. Every team would love to have their own Patrick Mahomes on the roster. But with the system that you have at hand, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's not to the same capacity. Maybe it's not to the same par. But what does work is what Lamar does. That's why, again, last night, big-time game. Lots on the line. Lamar living up to a standard. Yeah, he threw that interception for a touchdown to Tyrann Mathieu. Very bad interception. Terrible interception, if you're asking me. But he also rushed for 107 yards. He averaged a team-high 6.7 yards on the ground. He found two receivers, one of which was Marquise Brown, for over 100 yards on the night. Three different receivers averaged 11 yards per throw, being per catch. He averaged 9.2 yards per throw, had a passer rating of 78.9, which, again, is enough. And he scored two touchdowns with his legs. And he also had a really fun jump touchdown. Easily the longest jump pass touchdown you're ever going to see. That's just Lamar's game. That's just what Lamar does. And guess what else? It works. Because at the end of the game, as you're watching Kansas City hold on to that lead, as you're watching Kansas City hold on to, you know, their perfect season, everyone says, oh, this is the best shot. This is the best chance for Kansas City to go undefeated. They got past Cleveland. They got past Cleveland. They're going to go undefeated now. That's what we heard. Not the case. Not the case. Instead, John Harbaugh takes the risk. He looks at Lamar and goes, do you want to go for it? Do you want to go for it? Yeah. Why don't you? Brilliant play design to have Lamar waltz into the end zone. 1 yard run with 3 minutes and 14 seconds left. 36-35 final. Lamar gets his win. It's funny because he is a different quarterback. He isn't the norm. He isn't the exact pocket passer, the superstar All-American 2020 type of quarterback that people want. He's not the Joe Burrow, the Justin Herbert, or anyone else. He's his own entity. When we talk about Patrick Mahomes, everyone says, oh, there's no one in Patrick Mahomes' realm. You're right, there isn't. There's one other quarterback that there's no one else you can put in that same category, and it is Lamar Jackson. Because on any given day, he actually can pass for, I would say, about 250 to 275 yards. Yeah, he will have a couple. Maybe will have an interception. He maybe will have a turnover. But he also adds another 120 yards on the ground with his legs, probably getting you an extra two or three touchdowns. Every single week, he's finishing with 3 to 4 touchdowns. It's happening. That's just the case. But the way that the team trusts Lamar to be the guy, to be the absolute, the only reason that this team can work, well, that's a good thing. More importantly, that's something that you have to have at quarterback. You have to have the trust of what you're going to be. There is no doubt in my mind that the Ravens ultimately 100% trust Lamar Jackson with their lives. They trust exactly what Lamar is supposed to be. And as he flipped into the end zone, you could see two things. One, he's having fun. And two, he is the guy. Baltimore may walk away as the second best team in their own division, but they hold their heads high on Monday morning because they won that game based off two things, trust and drive, both coming from Lamar Jackson. So let's turn our attention over to the Miami Dolphins. It's a story I don't want to talk about. It isn't. Because of now, there's some concerns. It's not a 35-0 loss. It's not anything along those lines. I get it. Miami and Buffalo are two very different teams. Buffalo is the team to beat, and Miami is the one that's just, you know, we don't know what they are. But it's really hard to know what they are now because no Tua Tagovailoa. Leaves the game early with a rib injury, leaves the game, does not return after the, I think it's the second drive, has to get carted off. The good news is nothing is broken. But the bad news is there's reasons to believe he's not the franchise quarterback. There are. And it's not because of I don't think that he can play. I actually do. I think if you've ever met me, if you've ever heard the show, if you've ever heard me do rants or bits or anything along the lines of that, you know I am probably Tua defender number one. Because last season, goes 6-3 as a starter, completes over 70% of his passes, wins over 70% of his games, is inches away from going to the postseason, plays pretty consistent, just not up to par for a team that is looking like a 10-win team. Probably could have been a 12-win team if he would have taken that next step. But now comes the injury concerns. Back when he was carried off the field at Wade Davis Stadium in Starkville, Mississippi, there was already concerns. There was concerns about what would happen next with Tua for the long haul. He was out for the year, potentially undergoing a career-ending hip injury, one that Bo Jackson suffered during his time with the Raiders. And nobody knew. Nobody knew if he'd be able to walk right. Nobody knew if he'd be able to throw right. Nobody knew if he'd ever make it in the NFL. And now we have another rib injury. What's next? A shoulder? After that? Is it a leg? Is it a torn ACL? Is it an ankle? 9 out of 10 times. When you get injured once, that's the start. That's the start of something. And again, it's poor offensive line play. And everyone's always like, oh, well, you know, Tua couldn't get that win because Tua's Tua. No, Tua couldn't get that win because Tua got hurt. And Jacoby Brissett, who went 24-40 and finished with a passer rating of 59 and a QBR of 37, he couldn't get that win. He struggled moving the ball. He averaged 4.2 yards per play. He had an interception. Tua was sacked twice. Set was sacked four times for a grand total of six. That offensive line was doing nothing. Team didn't have 100 yards rushing the ball. Think they were going to be able to pass? Had under 250 yards total on the day. But it ain't Tua's fault. It's the offensive line's fault. And when I look at that, that's concerning. Because if I get it, if you're going to never be able to fix the offensive line, you can't have a quarterback who needs an offensive line. A lot of people have compared Tua Tagovailoa to Drew Brees and how Drew Brees moves. He's efficient. He controls the clock. Good on third down. Boom, 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 boom. It's like pencil work. You just look at it and touchdown. Straight throws. Consistently moving the football. You have to like it. You have to believe in it. But on the same time, Drew Brees had an excellent offensive line, especially in his later years in New Orleans. I'm sorry. He had two all-pro tackles. He had a Pro Bowl guard. And he had an up-and-coming center for most of his twilight year career. For most of the beginning of his year, once he got to New Orleans, he also had a pretty decent offensive line. There was like about 4 years, like years 9 through 13, where he kind of struggled with the offensive line. Besides that, he actually had a pretty stable unit. Tua's in year two. He's getting sacked left and right, and nobody can have success on this line. Jesse Davis starting over Liam Eichenberg? You're writing yourself a death sentence at that point. Michael Dieter? Not living up to the standard. I don't even know who their center is. That's how bad it is. This offensive line was always going to be a weak point. I've said this on the show. I believe that offensive line play is the strongest thing that a quarterback can have, especially a young quarterback. And look at what's happening. Joe Burrow struggles against Chicago because of bad protection up front, because he's getting pressured. Tua Tagovailoa leaves the game early because of bad offensive line. Justin Herbert played horrendously in times last year because of a bad offensive line. And then other times, he had to ball out and be the only reason why Los Angeles was good. Los Angeles actually had the worst offensive line last year. And somehow he was able to get the job done And it still every day baffles me that he posted numbers that he did. The fact of the matter is, when you look at Tua Tagovailoa's injury, the reason to not believe he could be a franchise quarterback isn't because of he's not talented enough. It's because of the offensive line is terrible. And for a quarterback of his tandemonium of what he can do best, you need a good offensive line. If I am Miami and I'm going to believe that I can win with Tua, which again, I have no idea when he's going to play again, my next entire offseason has to be building that offensive line. And if I can't do that, well, then maybe, yeah, I do have to call the Houston Texans for Deshaun Watson. If I know I can't play with a good offensive line and I can't land the right pieces, I don't think Tua's my guy. Doesn't mean Tua can't be a successful franchise quarterback. I'm going to say that again. He can be very good, and I do believe that on a right team with a good offensive line and decent receivers, he can make the most of it. But with the quarterback at this tandemonium, you have to have the right offensive line. Deshaun Watson has played with a terrible offensive line. He would work in Miami. Maybe Tua doesn't. There's one team that impressed me the most in college football week three who isn't, hint, not Alabama. We'll talk about that next right here on Just Saying It. When you need auto parts, O'Reilly.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at most of your local O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Heck, they'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have the parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts and visit O'ReillyAuto.com. It's O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. This is going to pain me. Actually, no, it's not, because it's the facts, and facts are facts. And unfortunately, I think some people kind of hate the fact that I do have a journalistic background and more of a journalistic style. I go for the hot takes sometimes, but I also go for the facts. And facts say right now that my gut is telling me I'm right on this. And even if my gut isn't telling me right on this, I watch both games late on, I guess it would be Sunday morning. I mean, it was up until 2:30. Okay, Mike, let me ask you. If you stay up just super late, do you make that early Sunday morning, or do you make that, oh, you know, just super, 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 super late Saturday night?
I feel like that's a tough one. I feel it's...
Like, I didn't sleep, so I'm still up on Saturday.
I feel that's late Saturday night.
Okay, so we'll go with that. So late Saturday night, I got home because, you know, I was at College Station. I had to cover the game. I was able to watch when I got home this one team. Then I went back and I watched the other team. Because I was like, it can't be that close. No, it is. It's a two-man race for the College Football Playoff National Championship going into week four. It's not even close to a conversation. We might as well just end it now. It's Alabama versus Georgia. Book it. Those are the two best teams. And until I see one of these two get knocked off, derailed, or another team really take that next step, I'm sorry. It's a two-man race. And I hate that, you know, I hate for the fact of all of you fans out there that say, oh, the SEC is ruining college football. Then get the heck better. Honestly, just get the heck better at the sport. Because it's not even fair what you're looking at these two teams. But I will say, if you were to ask me my top 10, and I don't usually do top 10s for college football, I'll do them right in week two. I thought last week was a fair week because it was the start of the NFL season. I don't really know what direction to go with in that. And then I'll probably do it somewhere in like week eight when the NFL season, we kind of know who are the contenders. We don't really know who are the pretenders. And now we know who are the college football playoff darlings, who are the ones in the actual race for the Final Four. I think it'll be important to do it then. And then at the end of the year, I'll do my top 10. Right when we know who are the college football playoffs Final Four. Did they get them right? Did they get them wrong? But if I were to bet today, going into week four, right now, who is the better team, Alabama or Georgia? I'm taking Georgia. I am. And I get it, a 40-13 victory over a rebuilding South Carolina team is not something to be very proud about. But what is something to be proud about is the consistency of how Georgia continues to play. Yeah, JT Daniels had one interception. I get that. He also had a 96.5 QBR rating. He also passed for 300 yards, and he scored three touchdowns. By the way, he's doing it without his number one wide receiver. You look at one of the best rushing attacks in college football last season, with the Gamecocks, they were held at 82 yards against his front seven. 214 passing yards, sure, but you also had three different quarterbacks play, one touchdown in the afternoon. By the way, this is a very young secondary. You don't have Tyson Campbell and Eric Stokes back there. You have Darion Kendrick and I think it's a freshman starting at the other cornerback spot, and Christopher Smith playing the nickel. You had another day of over 150 rushing yards with three different runners getting 50 yards and two getting touchdowns. And you had a consistency passing the ball. Four different weapons had over 40 yards of play. Three touchdowns on passing. And by the way, they were able to move the ball downfield efficiently. They were able to get three plays of over 20-plus yards on the afternoon. Five plays of over 15 yards on the afternoon. I get it. I understand. There's two very different teams. But in my opinion, I learned more in the Alabama game about what Georgia could be than I did more so about what Alabama is. And yes, when you look at the schedule for Georgia coming up, Vanderbilt should be an easy win. Arkansas is going to be playing off of a very tough either win or loss to Texas A&M on a neutral site. And then you have Auburn on October 9th. Very fun weekend that weekend. Very fun weekend in college football. That's not just the Alabama-Texas A&M game. That's not the Georgia-Auburn game. That's a very fun weekend. Oh, and by the way, now the greatest cocktail party in America is even tougher because of what you saw from Florida. Florida went toe-to-toe with Alabama. The darlings of college football. Nick Saban basically running it down everyone's throat every single season. And if you take out the first quarter, you take out the very first quarter where, again, everybody seems to struggle with Alabama. Florida was the better team. Consistently across the board, Florida was the better team. And I'll tell you right now, I said this to my brother. I said this to my mother, both of which basically banned me from the house for Thanksgiving dinner because of I just did not want to root for Alabama in the sense. If Anthony Richardson plays that game over Emory Jones, or at least is somewhat valuable in that game because he didn't take a snap. If he plays in that game, if he's able to get a couple passes off, he's able to do anything along those lines. Anything. Florida wins this game. Bryce Young played scared in the second half. Yeah, he threw for three touchdowns. Yeah, he threw for over 200 yards. Yes, he didn't have a turnover. Played scared. Two plays. He should have ran it. One play would have gotten him, I think, 15 yards. The other one would have gotten him a touchdown. Instead, he goes down. The run game, you know the one that you saw last season with Najee Harris, the one that was able to get 29 touchdowns, plus whatever else Brian Robinson and Mac Jones and all the other guys, Keelan Robinson, were able to get? 91 yards. And by the way, the longest play of scrimmage, 23 yards. One play over 10 yards from Brian Robinson. Minus 4 yards from Bryce Young. You didn't see that with Florida. You did. You know what else you didn't see from Florida? You didn't see a drop-off of play. Once Alabama took that lead, they hit cruise control and they started to glide. Guess what? Eventually, you're going to have someone speeding up on your rear. Then you got to kick it out of cruise control and you got to figure things out. 9 yards. 9 yards. If I were to say 9 yards about any other team in the country in a quarter, you'd go, yeah, all right, well, you know what? That's fair. Not Alabama. No, you had Alabama, you'd say 9 yards. You mean that's how many they allowed? No, that's how many they got. That's how many they walked away with. 245 yards rushing the football. You had three receivers finish with over 30 yards. You had five plays of 20-plus yards downfield in coverage. What are you doing, Alabama? In my opinion, and I'm just going to say it, Florida was the better team. Outside of the first quarter. Sometimes fast starts work in your favor, but they don't always. And with the right quarterback leading Dan Mullen's squad, Dan Mullen's a dang good coach. And I've been on that hype train for a minute about Dan Mullen. Alabama is 2-1 after this week if Anthony Richardson plays at least a few snaps. Because it offers something. They get that 2-point conversion right, guess what? They also are going into overtime, and momentum is swinging the swamp's way. So Georgia right now is the number one team in the country. Alabama is easily number two.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Every single Monday, I go around the NFL And sometimes I'll do college football. I think it really has to matter if there's like a big upset or not. So say like Georgia loses a game or Alabama loses or one of these teams actually dominates. Like last week when Oregon beat Ohio State. I thought that was important to do my new top 10. But instead, I'm going to do my NFL top 10 usually every single week. Now, the biggest thing that I think I have a big problem with or something that really aggravates me is when somebody loses, we only look at wins and losses. I'm sorry. You play a good team, you're going to get punished and not be in the top 10. Sometimes two good teams play against each other. You're going to tell me right now that I have to put Las Vegas inside my top 10 because they're 2-0 in the AFC? Give me a break. I could do that. I'm going to put the 10 best teams out there. Here are my top 10 going into week 3. And by the way, I can do this because I know for a fact Green Bay is not on my list and neither is Detroit. Before we start the music, though, I do want to give two quick shout-outs because they're very close. You can't allow 500 yards of offense and win and lose in overtime and make the list. So Seattle did not make the list. And the Carolina Panthers, it's very clear that Sam Darnold is not elite, but he is working with Matt Rhule. And Phil Snow has turned this defense around just enough to keep them in contention. I said that I liked Carolina. I had them finishing number 2 in the NFC South. I did for a reason. They were on the cusp. All right, let's actually do the top 10. So number 10 for me, surprise, surprise, it's the Denver Broncos. Yeah, they're not playing consistently at the quarterback position, but they're getting the job done. And I'm not going to take into consideration that, again, Teddy Bridgewater throwing for 328 yards and a pair of touchdowns against the Jacksonville Jaguars is meaningful because the final score ended up being 23-13. However, you are seeing some consistency with this offensive line. You are seeing the wide receivers play a little bit better. The run game is getting the job done. Both Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon are somehow averaging over, I think, 5 yards per play. And Cortland Sutton still is a beast. He is a true number one wide receiver. And with Jerry Jeudy taking away some of those reps last year, he's not going to have to worry about it this year because of they haven't been on the field basically at the same time. So it really helps out. Very good defensive play yesterday. I thought that both Kareem Jackson and Patrick Surtain had a really, really good day. I thought Alexander Johnson played pretty well. I think Von Miller had a decent day. Wonder what they're going to do if Bradley Chubb has to miss a lot of time. But I do like this Denver team to finish better than expected. Number 9. Guys, I know they're boring. I get it. I understand that there's not a lot of pup and pizzazz for it. But the New England Patriots know how to win football games. Running the ball, playing good defense, controlling the time of possession. Mac Jones, 6.2 yards per play, passer rating of 89. 186 yards, efficient quarterback, 22-30. Guess what else? Team played against a really lowly Jets team, and they lost the time of possession. They lost the first downs marker, but they got turnovers. 4 takeaways against Zach Wilson. This is how you play New England Patriots football. They're 1-1 for a reason. They are at least going to be, I think, around for a little bit longer in this conversation. Number 8. I can't believe I'm putting them on here. I'm going to look really stupid in a few weeks. But the Arizona Cardinals are getting the job done. They're absolutely getting the job done. 34-33 victory over the Minnesota Vikings. And in large part, it's because of an MVP front runner in Kyler Murray. 400 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, passer rating of 117.6. And he made some dope plays, guys. My God, behind that offensive line, that was trouble. The pass rush actually played very well for Minnesota. But Kyler Murray just is so incredible with his feet. If we're really talking about the next big dual threat quarterback, the one to get paid top dollar, I get Lamar Jackson. But Kyler is fun. It's video game. It's like a human joystick. You're moving him around. You ever play Miss Pac-Man and you're trying to avoid like the blinkies? Yeah. You know, waka, waka, waka. And he just like kind of moves and then finally gets the open space. Yeah. That's what I think of when I'm looking at Kyler Murray. Defensively, they need some work. Kirk Cousins, 3 touchdowns on the day. Over 177 rushing yards. Both teams finished with over 400 yards of offense at the end of the day. More first downs. Got it done for Arizona. And a missed kick. Arizona, I don't know if they're going to be legit, but right now, they're impressing. They are on all cylinders. Number 7. Do I want to put them higher? Yes, I do. But Baltimore still has some questions for me. One of them being the turnover ratio. You can't have two interceptions if you're Lamar Jackson. You just can't. And you can't have one going for a pick six. But again, what works is getting the ball in Lamar's hands. And however you can do it, get it done. 239 passing yards, 107 rushing yards, 3 total touchdowns on the day, and you went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. That says something to me. Defensively, they got a couple of turnovers. They were able to hold Mahomes to under 400 yards passing, so I guess that's a positive. They still allowed 400 yards of offense off 49 plays. Got to fix that. Each had 2 turnovers, and they won the time of possession. Those are big deals. They also had 9 more first downs than Kansas City. That plays a big factor in for me. So I go Baltimore at number 7. I think they could be a little higher down the line. Number 6. Yeah, I gotta go 49ers here, guys. They're boring. There's not a lot of pump pizzazz. There's not a lot of whoop, whoop, whoop. But you do know this for a fact. Kyle Shanahan is well-respected across the NFL for a reason. It's because of he gets the most done with whatever is limited on him. Jimmy Garoppolo, not the best game. Very average. Average got it done. 1 touchdown. Because you want to know why? Had a great running game. Elijah Mitchell, Jamichael Hasley, and Garoppolo all had over 20 rushing yards. Garoppolo gets the extra touchdown with his legs. Really controlled that game. And defensively, they shut him out. Over 300 yards allowed, but they only allowed 1 touchdown. Only 1 receiver had over 20 yards receiving, in Quez Watkins. They were doing it without their number 1 quarterback in Jason Verrett, who is out for the year with a torn ACL. So, you know what? It's enough to keep you in the conversation. That's it, at least. Number 5, Cleveland Browns. I don't know why people got so down on the Browns last week because they lost to the best team, or arguably the best team, in the NFL. Rebound next week against Houston Texans. I'll give it up for Houston, though. They're playing scrappy. They're playing hardball. They're looking the part. They look a lot better than advertised. They are definitely not going to be, I think, picking number 1 overall. Baker Mayfield, that interception's not on him. I don't know why people have to continue to say this. Anthony Schwartz, the rookie wide receiver out of Auburn, stops on the route. It allows Justin Reed to pick it off. Besides that, pretty solid day. Plays through intensity, plays through pain, gets 2 touchdowns on the day, 1 passing, 1 rushing. Good rushing attack overall, 156 yards allowed. They averaged 4.6 yards per play. And I think they picked up, I think it was over half, if not more. I think it was, I'm looking it up real fast. Yeah, they got 15 of their 22 first downs rushed the ball. So they own the time of possession, too. 35-24. They're a good team. They lost last week to arguably the best team in the AFC. Sorry, that's just kind of the reality of it. Number 4, the Buffalo Bills. I like Buffalo. I think Buffalo is a very good team. I think they're going to be very interesting to watch moving forward. But at the same time, when you look at Buffalo, they know how to win in 2 ways. 1, Josh Allen plays very strong football, which he played good football yesterday. He played strong. 17-33 passing, 179 yards, 2 touchdowns against 1 interception. But they also got a break with the defense. They also got a break with the with Tua, because Tua didn't play. So you got Jacoby Brissett. You're able to get a turnover because of it. They still controlled the game. They still held Miami to under 230 yards of offense. They held them to 3.1 yards per play and under 150 passing yards. They also had almost 10 more first downs, and they had almost 100 more total yards in the afternoon. Buffalo now has it a little bit easier. Washington, Houston before playing Kansas City, whatever kinks they're going through, they can kind of figure it out during those next 2 weeks easily. Number 3, man, I'm really going to do this. I did not think I was going to, but I'm going to put the Kansas City Chiefs here. It's not that I don't think Kansas City is good. I think Kansas City is easily the best team in the AFC still. Yeah, you lost to a lowly Ravens team. But the Ravens have been fighting with you for the last 3 years to be arguably the next team in the AFC. Patrick Mahomes, 2 interception day. Not what you want. I mean, 1 interception day. Not what you want. That fumble from Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to haunt Andy Reid's dreams. But the streak is over. So I got to, guys, knock you down a little bit. Patrick Mahomes now has 1 interception for the first time in September. We've been talking about it all week on the show last week. And also, he was a perfect 11-0 going into this weekend. Now he's 11-1. Welcome to the loser's bracket, Pat. I'm so happy. I don't know why. I'm not. I like Kansas City. They're still the best team in the AFC. Number two, Los Angeles. It's easily the Rams. Yeah, Matthew Stafford, they're an interception. I get it. Some games are not going to be pretty. But you go from the West Coast to the Central, that's already a nightmare of a game. And you have a great connection with Cooper Kupp. 163 yards, two touchdowns. Finished with a passer rating of over 101. And even with a very limited run game after Daryl Henderson, again, gets injured, you still move the ball and win the first down ratio. Matthew Stafford is definitely elevating this team into a different level. But I will say, playing on the road is already tough. Playing in Indianapolis is tough against a very good defense. And probably most of all, playing on the Central time zone as a West Coast team with an early kickoff is a nightmare. The good news is that you had a quarterback for years playing this time slot. So you probably had a little bit of a break. You may not have that break later on the season. And if you didn't have Matthew Stafford, I think you lose this game. But number one easily to me is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sorry, Tampa Bay just finds a way to do it. Once again, Tom Brady, another fabulous day passing, over four touchdowns, five touchdowns in this game, over 250 passing yards for the second straight week, zero turnovers this game, took three sacks, he did have a fumble. That's on me. Sorry about that. Man, I'm sorry about that. Man, the sneezes were getting me on that one. Four different receivers with over 25 passing yards. Definitely was able to move the ball around. Two touchdowns to Mike Evans, one touchdown to Chris Godwin. But it was the defense that made the difference maker. Mike Edwards, the hero of the afternoon. Two pick sixes going back the other way. You got to love it. 46 total yards on that. More importantly, this team is clicking on every single level. They are the team to beat. There you have it, my top 10 teams after week two of the NFL season. We'll close out hour one of Just Saying It right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Cole Thompson.
It's my all-time favorite game. Do I believe in the Raiders this year or not? Because let's be real, this is always what happens every single season. Don't believe me? Let's go down the list. Derek Carr starts off hot. Derek Carr continues to remain hot. And by the season's end, everything goes to kaput. Last season, Raiders started off 2-0. They then lost two games. They then won two games. Then they won three games. And then they started to fall off the wheels. In 2019, started the year off 1-2, then picked up two more straight wins, three wins right in the middle, and then fell flat in November. 2018, started off with a three-game losing streak, and everything went sour fast. 2017, two-game win streak, four-game lose streak, three-game win streak, loses the rest of the way. Do I want to believe in this Raiders team right now? No, I don't. But it's so hard for me not to because of, again, my inefficient love for Derek Carr always sums to outweigh it. It does. I don't get it. Is it because of I think that everyone needs to stop crapping on him? Sure. Do I love the fact that the Raiders play Raiders football when the Raiders football is being played the Raider way it works? Deep ball passes to vertical receivers who are really fast and making it score? You mean the Al Davis motive? Yeah, guess what? Happened yesterday. Henry Ruggs, big 80-something yard touchdown, goes deep, basically outruns every Pittsburgh Steelers receiver, and walks into the end zone. Raider football at its finest. The Raiders didn't have their number one running back in Josh Jacobs yesterday because if he hurt himself again against the Baltimore Ravens on Monday Night Football. So it was a short week. They still kept things interesting, and they picked up the 26-17 victory. It's hard for me to say, oh, you know what? This is a good team. But at the same time, it's Pittsburgh. Remember how I said last week how Buffalo losing to Pittsburgh was not that big of a deal because they're facing one of the best front sevens in the NFL? Well, one of the best players on that front seven was out for most of the game in T.J. Watt. So it doesn't shock me that Las Vegas gets a win. Here's the fun part. The next few weeks, they probably still could get some wins. Dolphins, no idea what's happening with Tua. Bears, no idea what to make of Justin Fields still yet. Broncos, looking pretty good. Eagles, doing enough to get by. Giants, that's a win. And then Kansas City. After that, you have Bengals, Cowboys, Washington. All potential wins. It's when does the wheel start falling off? Hopefully the last 4 weeks. When you play the Browns, the Broncos, the Colts, and the Chargers. Wheels fall off. Guess what? It's normal Raider football. Do I want to believe in the Raiders right now? Sure, of course I do. Because I love Derek Carr, and I want to see Derek Carr be successful. I think Derek Carr going to another team, very similar to what you saw with Matthew Stafford, would work out fabulously. But unfortunately, he plays for the Raiders, and I don't see him going anywhere. If you do anything today, if you do anything this morning, go type in Lamar Jackson touchdown. Go type in Lamar Jackson touchdown and find the photo. Everyone knows what photo I'm talking about. Him doing a flip into the end zone. It is an ice cold photo when looking at it the right way. If you flip it upside down, holy crap, you have entered Pandora's box. It is the greatest photo of all time.